Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely, good morning. I'm here today on behalf of the two Alta Berkeley entities and Kiwi Ventura Cervicos de Consultoria. I think I should have said good afternoon. There are two articles of Omnion's Certificate of Incorporation that are material to this appeal. I thought it would be convenient to the court to have those provisions at hand. With no objection from counsel for Omnion, I prepared a handout which I gave to the clerk to give to your honors. As the briefing has evolved in this case, there are two issues before the court today. First, what constitutes the liquidation event that occurred in September 2010? And second, assuming, as plaintiffs contend, that the liquidation event was comprised of what the briefing refers to as the preferred stock conversion and the first step merger, what is the effect, if any, of what we have called the provided however clause of Article 4th B3B of Omnion's Certificate of Incorporation? I propose to address those two issues in that order. Excuse me. Plaintiffs have consistently maintained that the preferred stock conversion and the first step merger constitute a series of related transactions within the meaning of Omnion's Certificate of Incorporation and together constitute the liquidation event that occurred. That position flows ineluctably from the language of the certificate.
Can you start with the principle of construction, how we should interpret the Certificate of Incorporation?
It is interpreted as a contract, Your Honor. You look at the plain language of the agreement. There's a particular principle that I'll come to later that we think is particularly applicable here, that a certificate of incorporation where the acquirer of the security is not involved in negotiating the terms of the certificate as concededly as the case here with respect to appellants, then the certificate must be construed from the perspective of the reasonable purchaser and any ambiguities must be construed against the corporation.
But we are to, are we to reconcile all the provisions of the instrument, if possible?
Yes, sir.
I gather the Alta entities originally were involved in the negotiation of the provision insofar as it affected them?
No, sir.
No?
No. The record is the relevant provisions were amendments that were effected in 2004. The Alta Berkeley entities came onto the scene, and Kiwi came onto the scene in 2007 and took the certificate as they found it at that time. And it is conceded in the record that there was no negotiation about the terms of the 2004 amendment.
Is there anything in the record that discloses the reasons for the amendment that took place before the Alta entities became involved?
There is, Your Honor, but we contend that is not competent evidence in this record. There was submitted to the Superior Court by affidavit of counsel for Omnion, Harmonic, materials that were submitted in the California Fairness Hearing, which purported to address what had occurred in connection with the 2004 amendments.
What I had in mind, Mr. Monheit, were disclosures that were sent to investors. I understand, however, that Omnion is not a reporting company. That is, it's not a company that files SEC required reports.
At this time, that is certainly true. I don't recall, frankly, whether that was true in 2004.
Okay.
What I was asking
is whether any information was disseminated to shareholders explaining the reasons for the amendments that eventually were approved.
In 2004?
Yes.
There's none in the record, Your Honor, and I don't know the answer to your question. So coming back to where I was, we've maintained that these two transactions are part of a series of related transactions within the meaning of the Certificate of Incorporation and together constitute the liquidation event. We submit that position flows from the language of the Certificate of Incorporation. The COI does not define the terms series or related. Those terms, therefore, have their common English meaning, and these transactions fit any common usage of those terms. One agreement provides for both. They're intended to occur in prompt sequence. The language of the certificate defines a series of related transactions constituting a liquidation event to include, and I quote, without limitation, any reorganization, merger, or consolidation. And in the second part of the definition, it refers to a merger, consolidation, or otherwise. Omnion denominated this set of transactions as a reorganization by the title of the document giving rise to them. The language is expansive in the certificate. The two transactions together fit squarely within that definition.
Is that disputed? I mean, I
well, I think not, Your Honor. At least it wasn't in the Superior Court, but it is now. In the Superior Court, Omnion effectively conceded that they were related transactions. I can find no statement in their briefs in the Superior Court which says that the liquidation event here is simply the first step merger. Rather, in statements, in pleadings, and statements and pleadings and interrogatory responses in their briefs and at argument in the Superior Court, Omnion repeatedly acknowledged that these transactions were related and integral. Those were words they used, not distinct or severable. And all those statements are collected at pages 10 to 11 and 24 to 25 of our opening brief and pages 1 to 2 of our reply brief. Indeed, Omnion asserted in the Superior Court that it was not, and I'm here quoting, not contesting that consummation of the harmonic Omnion transaction, whether viewed as a single omnibus transaction or a sequence of transactions, constituted a liquidation event under the COI. That statement appears at page 197 of our appendix. It's in Omnion's reply brief in the Superior Court,
well,
page 6.
My understanding was that it's that Omnion agrees that these transactions are related and that they're part of a series, but even so, it doesn't matter.
Yes, that is their argument, and I will address that. The point I'm making here is that the Superior Court found that the liquidation event was purely the first step merger. That was not Omnion's position, or at least it never said so expressly in the Superior Court, but it fully embraces that position here today. Its own statements in the Superior Court show that this interpretation of the COI was not its reading prior to today. Now, one of the points, and to get to the response to Your Honor's question, Omnion makes much of the sequencing of these transactions. And the certificate unambiguously makes the relative timing of the elements of the series of related transactions immaterial. The temporal requirement of the certificate in one instance is prior to and after the series of related transactions, and in the second part of the liquidation event definition, it is after the closing of the two transactions. The definition of liquidation event in the certificate, and that's what governs us, gives no effect to the sequence in which the related transactions occurred. Thus, the certificate defines the liquidation event arising from a series of related transactions to be the occurrence of all of them, not one individual transaction in the series, as the trial court held and Omnion now contends. Nor does the fact that the preferred stock conversion was a condition of the first step merger remove it from the liquidation event definition, as the trial court opinion concluded.
Let me just make sure I understand your position correctly. If, as you argue, these three transactions, that is the first merger, the second merger, and the conversion, are all related and that is part of a series of related transactions, that concludes the analysis. Because once they're linked in that way, then they become a liquidation event under the charter, and therefore your clients were entitled to opt out. That worked, to put it differently, they were entitled to receive their liquidation preference if they demanded it before anything else took place. Is that correct?
It is our position that these were related transactions, a liquidation event occurred as defined in the certificate, and they're entitled to receive their liquidation preference.
Okay, and the Superior Court attempted to deal with that, to parse that by saying, no, the liquidation event is the first step merger combined with the second step, but it doesn't include the conversion.
A bit different, if I may please, Your Honor. The second step merger never occurred for reasons that are immaterial here. The Superior Court concluded that the liquidation event was solely the first step merger, and the preferred stock conversion, as the Superior Court analyzed it, was a condition to the liquidation event.
Yeah, but not
not part of
a related, that is a part of the series of related transactions. It stood apart separately. Right?
I think that's a fair reading of the Superior Court's opinion.
And if I understand it correctly, the Omnion argues, well, first, we agree with the Superior Court, but even if the conversion and the first step merger were part of a series of related transactions, it doesn't matter because the conversion took place first.
Right. Once
that happened, there was no that cut off whatever right there was to a liquidation preference.
That is their temporal sequencing argument, and I address that by noting that the language of the liquidation event definition does not give any effect to the sequence in which the series of related transactions occur. It defines the temporal sequencing defined by the certificate as before and after the related transactions, not with regard to.
Right. So necessarily, under your reading or your client's reading of the certificate provisions, the only way that Omnion could accomplish what it in fact did accomplish here, that is lawfully, would be to separate out in some real sense the forced conversion from the merger, that is, have the forced conversion take place without respect or without contemplating any merger that would take place immediately thereafter.
That is certainly a way they would have accomplished it. There may be others. It's frankly not our job to suggest them other ways to get from A to B, but certainly it is a fact that it is a fair read of the certificate that
once they linked those transactions in the way they did here, they couldn't do that and not pay to your clients their liquidation preference if it's what your clients wanted.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is our position. The fact that the preferred stock conversion was a condition of the first step merger doesn't remove it from the liquidation event definition. There is nothing in the definition indicating such an exception. If that is what Omnion had intended, they could easily have written an exception into the definition of liquidation event. They didn't do it, and they can't create it now. So for those reasons, we believe that the Superior Court's conclusion that the preferred stock conversion was not part of a liquidation event is erroneous. That leads me to the second question I stated at the start. What is the effect of the provided however clause? As I've already noted, there's nothing in the liquidation event definition that suggests an exception to the preferred stock conversion. Similarly, there's nothing in Article 4B3B, the clause concerning the preferred stock conversion, that suggests any limitation on the definition of liquidation event. So there's nothing in the certificate language which says that a preferred stock conversion cannot be one of a series of related transactions constituting a liquidation event. This brings in the interpretive principle I mentioned earlier, Justice Ridgely, that the one that should be drawn from the court's decision in Kaiser Aluminum. When the purchaser of the securities is not a party to the negotiation of the terms of the certificate provision at issue, the reasonable expectation of the purchasers must be given effect. There's no dispute here that the plaintiffs did not participate in drafting these provisions. There's nothing in the language of either provision that would have put a reasonable acquirer of this preferred stock on notice that a series of related transactions that otherwise fit the definition of liquidation event would not constitute a liquidation event where one of those transactions was a preferred stock conversion.
Well, do you offer any interpretation that reconciles these provisions?
I think the problem is, Your Honor, that there's a circularity. In the provided however clause, it says a preferred stock conversion conditioned on a liquidation event. And in that, what Omnion is trying to do is read liquidation event in that context to mean a merger. But liquidation event is a defined term in the certificate. It's capital L liquidation, capital E event. And you have to go back to the definition of liquidation event, and then you're back into the series of related transactions language.
So is the answer no, you do not offer a version that reconciles these provisions?
That's where I am, Your Honor. That's where I've come out. I think it is simply a drafting error, And I think they created a circularity in that definition.
Let me just make sure I understand. If it's possible to have a standalone forced conversion, that is the step one of the three steps that have been outlined here, is it correct that in that circumstance, the series A22.2 would still be able to opt out?
A standalone forced conversion?
Right.
No. Now, so, the A22 in that event would not have been able to opt out, as I read.
So they could also be forced out.
Yes, sir.
Or forced to convert.
Yeah, and that is one of the peculiarities here, because we're told, and again, we disputed the admissibility of this evidence, but we're told that this provided however clause was designed to protect the liquidation preference of the A22. It frankly didn't do a very good job.
All right, but in these circumstances where you do have you don't have a standalone conversion, but rather a conversion that's linked to a merger, then the series 2.2 can opt out.
Well, it's linked to a quote capital liquidation capital right. event defined term, but I do think that's an important distinction here. But yes, under the provided however clause, that's the
they
way
they would have an absolute right, yeah. unqualified
right to opt out.
And that's what occurred here.
Yes.
So it would follow, would it not, that if your reading of the charter provisions is correct, that language is surplusage, at least in this particular context?
Yes, it is.
Isn't needed.
Yeah, and I think that comes about from the circularity of the terms and the way they chose to use the language. Again, it was conditioned on a capital liquidation, capital E event, a defined term which goes back to incorporating the series of related transactions language. It's simply a problem in the drafting and the preparation of the of that provision. So I've gone longer than I had intended to do. Let me try and wrap up quickly, but I appreciate the court's questions, and I'm glad to have the chance to respond to them. And to just pick up where I was with your question, Justice Ridgely, I do think there's a circularity resulting from the way that definition was structured. That takes us back into Kaiser, not simply the initial interpretive principle, but ultimately its conclusion that an ambiguity in a certificate of incorporation, where that provision, where the acquirer of the security did not participate in the drafting, that ambiguity is resolved against the corporation. So for that reason, in addition, we believe we're entitled to judgment on this record. Unless the court has other questions for me at the moment, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good afternoon, Your Honors. Peter Walsh on behalf of defendant below, Omnion, Inc. Before I begin, let me just introduce Thomas J. Martin of the Wilson-Sonsini firm and my colleague, Matt Davis. Omnion respectfully requests that the court affirm the Superior Court's ruling. We believe Judge Sleight read the Certificate of Incorporation absolutely correctly. The Certificate of Incorporation clearly gives the preferred stockholders a right to convert before a liquidation event. And there was, in fact, a vote which was done by written consent, and there
actually,
was a conversion.
It was locked up before.
Correct.
Yeah.
Written consents pursuant to Section 228 from the preferred stockholders were in hand before the merger occurred. And so the fundamental problem that the plaintiffs have is, in connection with the liquidation event, the merger, they were not preferred stockholders. They were common stockholders because a conversion had been approved by a majority of the preferred stockholders. And what Section B, 3B says is that the preferred stockholders have an automatic right to make that election, voting as a class, with one exception. And that one exception is the A22 preferred. That's this unique series of preferred, one share with a liquidation preference of 1.5 million. So as you can imagine, you're never going to have a merger where each share of common stock is going to be $1.5 million. So what the A2 did was contracted for themselves the ability to opt out of the conversion, which occurred before the merger. And again, the conversion had independent economic and legal significance. If you look at page 6 of the plaintiff's brief, you'll see that there were basically 5 series of preferred stock who had liquidation preferences. There was the A1, the A2.2, which I just mentioned, the A6, the B1, and the C1 held by the plaintiffs. Now let's take the case of the A1 preferred. They had a liquidation of preference of $2.20.
Well, the fact is that if you put the 2.2 to one side, because they got their money no matter what, the only series that ended up with merger consideration that was less than what their liquidation preference would have been were Mr. Monheit's clients.
Exactly.
And that's the economic issue that drives the case.
Exactly.
Here's my question is, and I've asked it to Mr. Monheit, suppose counterfactually that Omnion decided to have a forced liquidation unrelated to any merger. Would there be a carve-out right for the Series 2.2 in that instance?
Well, I believe the charter gives the preferred the right to an election. There's another provision which I think is important here, and it's not cited in our brief, but let me just reference this. It's a B4E, and it can be found in the appendix at A159. And what that says is that the preferred have a vote before a liquidation event. So in connection, that gave them the preferred a vote, and the B2B provision gave them the election to vote before a liquidation event as a class.
My question is whether if you have a standalone conversion, forced conversion, without any merger following it, does the carve-out for the Series 2.2 still exist? Does it apply?
I believe it does, Your Honor, although I'm not sure why you would have a conversion before or not in connection with a liquidation.
Maybe because you just want to get rid of all of the preferences. It could be part of a refinancing or a restructuring. There could be reasons for it.
Right. In that case, I think the answer would be yes.
So the 2.2 series has a contractual right not to be converted and to be cashed out at its liquidation preference, in any event. That is, whenever there's a conversion that may be forced upon them.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. The next question is, and this it's at the conceptual level. I understand that your side concedes that these are all related transactions, even though the second merger didn't actually take place. Is that correct?
Well, to be very clear, we concede that this all happened one right after another in connection with.
But I'm asking conceptually, in terms of the charter language, what do we have here? Are all these three transactions part of a series of related transactions?
No, Your Honor.
They're not.
To be very clear, no. No. There is a separate independent right to a conversion vote.
So the conversion is not part of the series. It may be related, but it's not part of the series?
It is not. It is not. And let me speak precisely to the language of B2B, which is the definition of liquidation event.
Well, I mean, just want to make sure that that's your answer to my question is yes before you explain it. They're related, but they're not. The conversion stands alone, even though it's related, because it's not part of the series.
Correct.
The series of related transactions begins with merger number one, and if it had taken place, merger number two.
Correct. Right. Correct. And to be precise, the conversion certainly was an element of this transaction, but it is not a part of the series of transaction within the meaning of the definition of liquidation event. And let me speak to that language, because we gave an example in a brief. Basically, what the liquidation event definition is a change of control provision. It basically contemplates a situation where more than 50% of the company is being sold. Not uncommon, quite common. And the series of transaction language, as I suspect any corporate lawyer would tell you, is to make sure that you capture situations where control is being sold in a multi-step transaction. For example, if somebody came along and said, I will buy 40%, and then an affiliate or at some later time will buy another 30-40% so that we acquire control, that would be a series of transactions. That language in the definition of liquidation event is designed to prevent an avoidance of the right to a liquidation event. That's the purpose of the language. That's the meaning. It does capture, and it says a transaction or a series of transactions. So if you had a series of transactions which resulted in a change of control, that is within the definition of liquidation event. But there is a separate independent concept in this charter, which is the right of the preferreds to convert. It's not part of the liquidation event. And I think that's very important. And if the court looks at the record, what you will see, for example, is the provision of the charter which I cited, which gives the preferred a vote prior to a liquidation event. You will also see in the organization document, the recapitalization agreement, at section 2.7, it says the conversion would occur immediately prior to the effective time of the merger. And moreover, the organization document also says that the conversion of the preferred to common is a condition to the first step merger. So well, you have to have that as an element before you get to the liquidation event.
Is it correct to say, and again, I'm speaking at the conceptual, you know, level in charter language, that what divides your position from Mr. Monheit's is the issue of whether the conversion is part of the series of related transactions? You say it's not. He says it is.
I believe that's correct. But as Your Honor pointed out in questioning Mr. Hunt, Monheit, I'm not sure it really matters because the conversion.
He says it matters because once you, and again, it's maybe linguistic, but under the charter language, once all three of these transactions are part of a series of related transactions, you have, you know, essentially conceded that there's a liquidation event and created a liquidation right, that is a right to a liquidation preference that makes legally impossible what happened here.
Right. And I think the problem with their argument fundamentally is that it ignores the sequence, which again is by design and was a right given to the preferred. So again, you know, the problem with his argument is the definition of liquidation event doesn't say, for example, that a preferred gets its liquidation preference, notwithstanding the fact that there has been a conversion of that stock to common.
Well, he relies also on Kaiser and that any ambiguity has to be resolved in his client's favor. So why is that inappropriate?
We disagree with that. One, our position is there's no ambiguity here. You can give meaning to every provision of the charter. In fact, as I think Mr. Monheit to some extent conceded, his reading would basically nullify the conversion. Let's think about it. And I want to get back to answering what's the correct standard in terms of interpreting the charter, but let's think about what his interpretation means. For example, the A1 preferred stock that had a right to convert to common, it did convert and got $10-$11 a share as opposed to its $2.20. What would Mr. Monheit's interpretation of the charter mean? What does the A1 get? Does it get its liquidation preference? Is there some election as to liquidation preference versus consideration common? It makes his interpretation makes a mess of the charter, and it can't be reconciled.
How so?
Because what would the result be? What would the A1 get?
If they,
Well, what I'm saying is the only way you can fairly read the charter to make sense is that if the preferreds have a right to a vote, and they vote as a class, and they vote to convert the common, that's what they get. That's what the charter says. That's what they get. And that's the problem he has. His client is not a preferred stockholder anymore. He got carried along in an election that he was required to get carried along. He didn't have an opt-out like the A2. So the vote was taken. It was deemed to have been taken and occurred before the merger. He holds common. He doesn't hold preferred.
Well, let's go, getting back to your question, what does the A1 series get by way of example? It may well be that the answer is those, the majority that voted to convert get common, and the those that objected, the minority, get their liquidation preference.
That's not what the charter would say would occur, because if you, it's like in the election, if you vote for, if you get outvoted in the election, you don't get your candidate. You lose. You're outvoted. They were outvoted.
Well,
and they, and
I understand this, that. This, I understand that's your position, but I'm just saying, isn't it possible to read the charters creating what would in effect be a de facto cash out?
No, and here's why. Because there's a provision that says there is one class of preferred that doesn't have to go along with the vote, the A2.2. That's how you read everything together. And so their problem is they happen to be the only preferred stockholder that economically a conversion to common wasn't in their interest, but unlike the A2.2, they didn't get opt out of the vote. And that's really what it comes down to. And again, the problem with their argument is that the definition of liquidation event does not say anywhere that they get their liquidation preference, notwithstanding the fact that they've been converted to common, which is in fact what happened here. That's the problem they have.
Can you address the circularity argument that Mr. Monheit has made?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think there's any circularity here. I think each provision of the charter can be read to given its plain meaning. And again, there's a conversion right. There's one class that gets to get opt out of the vote. The vote's taken. And then you have a liquidation event where all of the preferred, other than the class A2.2, became common stockholders, and they got their consideration as common stockholders. It's that simple. And again, the problem with their position is it basically carves out the whole conversion right, because it's basically saying to the other preferreds, you don't get that vote. You don't get to convert to common. But the charter says, oh, yes, they do. And that's exactly what they did. Justice Bridges, I do want to go back to your question. We disagree that, first of all, there isn't any ambiguity in the charter. But I believe the lower court cited what is the correct standard for interpreting a certificate, which is specifically you don't construe any ambiguity necessarily against the preferred. In this case, any preferred stock provision is strictly construed, and the court does not look to grant rights to a preferred stockholder that it is not otherwise entitled to. That's what the case law says. That is the way the Court of Chancery routinely construes preferred stock provisions.
Am I correct in understanding that your argument depends upon adopting your reading of the term series of related transactions in the liquidation event clause?
Yes, to some extent I think it does. But again, I think the reading that we have proffered is very much of a common sense. It gives meaning to that series of transaction language, and it makes sense. And again,
I understand that it would make sense that a company would want to have a provision that would apply not just in a one-step acquisition, but also in a situation where, as you've described, there were multiple purchases that eventually led to a change of control. But that's not by its terms the only possible situation that, you know, series of related transactions isn't a generally understood defined term that means only a step-by-step or a creeping acquisition or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you're asking that it be defined in that arguably limited way without anything that I can see to support that.
Well, you may think it is, we're suggesting a limited definition, but I think the more forceful point is if you give it the meaning that Mr. Monheit suggests, in other words, that it encapsulates a conversion, it wreaks havoc on the rest of the charter. And it goes back to the point of, okay, so you've had a vote of the preferred. They've uniformly, not uniformly, but by wide majority have supported. So what does the, for example, A1 preferred stockholder get? According to Mr. Monheit, he's stuck with his liquidation preference because the conversion meant nothing. That's the problem with his reading. He's basically saying just ignore the fact that there was a vote. He concedes it was a vote that was permitted. He concedes that the vote was deemed to have occurred and did occur prior to the merger. But he's saying just ignore what happened over there because I happen to be the only preferred stockholder that would benefit from not having been converted to common, even though it's a fact and it did happen. And that's why he wants to get away from the sequence. I think really what it comes down to, it's an extremely hyper-technical reading of a phrase designed to capture clearly what it was not intended to capture.
Well, the language of the charter is not exactly crystal clear. I mean, we're talking about hyper-technicality. One can get a headache trying to follow all the provisions.
Your Honor, I don't disagree that it's, you know, I think if any one of us were drafting that, they may have drafted it differently. But I think what's really critical here is that you can't dispute the fact that the preferred had a right to a class vote.
Perhaps if I understand your position, your answer to Justice Berger's question is not that you start out with an a priori definition of a series of related transactions, but rather attempt to give meaning to the provided however language and the pre-existing right to vote for a conversion, and from that reason to the conclusion that the conversion here, which is step number one, is not part of the series of related transactions.
That's correct.
That is, you don't start with the series and give it a definition and then reason downwards. You reason backwards.
Yes, in part. And I think just to conclude, our reading gives meaning to every provision of the charter and makes economic sense.
Thank you.
We are not asking the court to imply any right we don't have, and we are not taking issue with the strict construction of preferences. Indeed, we're asking the court to construe the definitions as they're written. And if one looks at the language of the liquidation event definition, it simply does not give significance to the sequence in which the series of related transactions occurred, nor does it give any...
We have a choice of a reading that, in Mr. Walsh's words, gives meaning to every provision of the charter, and another reading which makes the provided however language, at least as to the A22, superfluous. Aren't we compelled to pick the former over the latter?
No, Your Honor, because I frankly disagree that his reading gives meaning, because what he's trying to do and what Omnion is trying to do is ignore the fact that in the provided however clause they use the defined term liquidation event, and that has a specific meaning. Then you have to go back to see what that term means. And this is a series of related transactions. And it takes you right back into this problem. And I was interested to hear, if I heard correctly, I heard Mr. Walsh say that it is their position that this is not a series of related transactions. So I will take a minute to just reflect back on some of the things they said in the Superior Court. At page, at appendix page 126, paragraph 23 of their answer, they denied any implication that there were distinct severable components to what they called the merger. Same thing in answer paragraph 24 at page A127. In an interrogatory response, they said the reality is that the various elements, e.g. preferred stock conversion, first step merger, were all related and integral to the single merger transaction. In another place, they said they're not contesting that the consummation of the Harmonic Omnion merger transaction, whether viewed as a single omnibus transaction or as a sequence of transactions, constitute a liquidation event. They conceded in the Superior Court that this was a series of related transactions. That brings them within the definition of liquidation event. And then they have to deal with the fact that the provided, however, clause utilizes that very definition. Then we also have a distinct disagreement on the conversion question that Justice Jacobs asked as to whether a standalone conversion would deprive the A22 of its liquidation preference. We submit that it would. If I heard correctly, Mr. Walsh disagreed with that. The language of the certificate is there for your honors to review on that. But since we got into that, let me just make two other points about how the A22 could lose its liquidation preference altogether. There's a public one way that one automatic conversion occurs on a public offering. That's at the start of Article 4B3B. There's no opt-out there for the A22. Also, under Article 4B2A1, if there is a liquidation event and there are insufficient funds to satisfy all the liquidation preferences, there's a proration provision, which makes sense. The problem is that the provided however clause says if there's a liquidation event in which the A22 gets its full liquidation preference, it can opt out.
Let me see if I have this right. Mr. Walsh, I understood Mr. Walsh to say that Series A2.2 stockholders have an absolute contractual right to opt out of any forced conversion under any circumstances.
I heard that too, Your Honor.
Your position is no, that's not correct.
That is our position.
It's a right that's bounded.
Absolutely. It's bounded. It's bounded by this, by the connection to the liquidation event as that term is defined.
So there could be some forced conversion transactions where the series 8.22 or A2.2 would not have an opt-out right.
That is correct. The third one that I just mentioned would be where there isn't, you know, sufficient funds to pay all the liquidation preferences and there has to be proration, because if you look at the provided however clause, it says if there's a liquidation event which would give them their full liquidation right. So if this provision was intended to protect their liquidation right, it didn't do a very good job. There's also one other peculiarity in the language. The provided however clause says in the event such conversion is conditioned upon or follows consummation of a liquidation event. Follows consummation of a liquidation event? Why would they want to opt out? If what they want is their liquidation preference and a liquidation event has occurred, they should already be entitled to it. My point simply is this is not a well thought out provision. This is a drafting error. And where you have this kind of convoluted provision that simply doesn't work as apparently intended, the principle of Kaiser comes back into play. What they're essentially asking for is that there, you should read the certificate to include one of two exceptions. Either you should read into the liquidation event definition an exception for a preferred stock conversion conditioned on a merger. But that exception isn't written there. They could have written it. That language would be easy to create, but it's not there. They alternatively would say, well, if there's a vote to make something that is a liquidation event into not a liquidation event, again, that language isn't there. There's a model for that. It was in their prior certificate. So it simply doesn't work the way they want it to work. We didn't structure this transaction. We didn't create the certificate language. We ask that the court reverse the judgment of the Superior Court and direct the entry of summary judgment on this issue in our favor. Unless your honors have any other questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of counsel. We'll take a short recess.